There is growing evidence that this same Myanmar military, led by the same senior leadership, is now engaging in crimes against humanity.
Myanmar protests and deaths continue. It's Monday, March 15th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, key nations meet to discuss China, South Korea military drills underway, an uncertain peace for Afghanistan, COVID complications, searching for Martians. It's all on today's VOA Asia. At least four more people have died in Myanmar's anti-coup protests. Police and security forces fired live rounds into a crowd of protesters Sunday in the town of Bago near Yangon, killing one protester, and later in the day in the Halong Thayar township, killing three protesters, according to social media posts confirmed by VOA's Burmese service, as well as a number of witnesses and domestic media accounts cited by the Reuters news agency. At least 11 demonstrators were killed Saturday in Mandalay, the country's second-largest city in Yangon, and the central town of Paey, when police and security forces opened fire on protesters who again took to the streets against the February 1st military coup. Eight deaths in Mandalay were confirmed by VOA's Burmese service, citing an emergency medical team worker. Meanwhile, a United Nations investigator is accusing Myanmar's military junta of likely crimes against humanity and is urging international coordinated action to isolate and get rid of the regime. The report is under review by the Human Rights Council, as we hear more from Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
United Nations Special Rapporteur Thomas Andrews says that since Myanmar's military seized power from the elected government February 1st, security forces have murdered at least 70 people and arbitrarily arrested more than 2,000. He says there is video evidence of security forces viciously beating protesters, destroying property, looting shops, and firing indiscriminately into people's homes. He says the junta has been systematically destroying legal protections and crushing freedom of expression and assembly. Andrews notes the current leadership of what he calls a murderous illegal regime is facing charges of genocide before the International Court of Justice. The military is accused of human rights abuses committed in Rakhine State against the mainly Muslim Rohingya minority.
It should come as little surprise that there is growing evidence that this same Myanmar military, led by the same senior leadership, is now engaging in crimes against humanity, including the acts of murder, enforced disappearance, persecution, torture, and imprisonment in violation of fundamental rules of international law.
Andrews says there's growing evidence that these acts of cruelty are part of a coordinated, systematic campaign rather than a series of isolated events. He is calling on other countries to take strong, coordinated action to stop these atrocities.
Stop the flow of revenue into the illegal junta's coffers. This can happen now. Multilateral sanctions should be imposed on both senior junta leaders and their major sources of revenue, including military-owned and controlled enterprises and Myanmar oil and gas enterprise.
He notes Myanmar's natural gas projects will generate an estimated $1 billion in revenue this year. Without sanctions, he warns, the military junta will be able to use these funds to support its criminal enterprise and attack innocent people. Permanent Secretary of Myanmar's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Chan A, says the Tatmadaw, as the military is also called, did not want to stall the nascent democratic transition in the country. However, he says it had no choice, given what he described as last November's fraudulent general election. The fraud allegations have been denied by Myanmar's Electoral Commission. He says the authorities have been exercising utmost restraint in dealing with violent protests. He says his government is committed to restore and maintain the democratic transition in accordance with the existing state constitution. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thousands of Rohingya refugees are living in temporary camps in India's northwestern Jammu and Kashmir region, where they fear deportation back to Myanmar. VOA Urdu Services Zubair Dar visited a camp of people who said they fled abuses and do not want to go back. Hushan Nurzai narrates the story.
More than 5,000 Rohingya refugees who fled violence in Myanmar, now called this makeshift refugee camp, home.
We have watched on the news that some say that we have to be driven out of here. But no one has come here to tell us to leave.
Activists say India's Hindu nationalists have stoked fears about the Rohingya, calling them a security risk in a region that borders long-time rival Pakistan and has significant numbers of Indian Muslims.
Jammu is located in a very sensitive area. Besides being near to the border, it has a heterogeneous population. Their presence in Jammu, I would consider, is a ticking bomb that can explode anytime. Therefore, they have to be evicted from Jammu, particularly from this place.
Last week, Indian police reportedly detained more than 150 Rohingya from the region to extradite them to Myanmar, where they worry they will be subject to more violence by the Burmese military.
We do not expect anything good from them because they killed our parents. They massacred our brothers and sisters. They destroyed our children. They have committed a genocide against Rohingyas that has no precedent in the history of the world.
Observers estimate that overall there are approximately 40,000 Rohingya refugees living in India. Rights groups have called on the Indian government to halt deportations and protect those in need of refuge. For Zubair Dar, in Jammu, India, Roshan Nurzai, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. We have the mind to win this battle, Myanmar activist speaks out about coup crackdown. No North Korea response to Biden administration outreach, according to U.S. officials. Pentagon chief sees Asia ties as deterrent against China. United Nations condemns arbitrary killings of activists in Philippines. Australian researchers claim asthma and autoimmune breakthrough. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. And we invite you to stop by our website at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States, Japan, Australia, and India, the grouping also known as the Quad, has announced financing agreements to support ramping up production of up to 1 billion doses of coronavirus vaccine in India to be used in Southeast Asian countries. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has the story.
Southeast Asia, home to 655 million people, is hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic, with most cases reported in Indonesia. The region is suffering from a shortage of coronavirus vaccines, something the United States wants to address together with Japan, Australia, and India, the grouping known as the Quad.
In an ambitious new joint partnership that is going to boost vaccine manufacturing, and for the global benefit and strengthen vaccinations to benefit the entire Indo-Pacific.
The financing plan launched Friday by the Quad will help Indian vaccine manufacturers increase production of up to 1 billion doses of vaccines by 2022. They will be used mostly in Southeast Asia, according to an administration official. President Joe Biden has been under pressure to respond to Beijing's vaccine diplomacy as he seeks to vaccinate all Americans first. In May, Chinese President Xi Jinping proclaimed that Chinese-made vaccines would become a global public good. It's a narrative the Biden administration is eager to change as it seeks to address the need for vaccinations at home and around the world.
They want a coalition approach to bring all those pieces of the COVID response together, to make sure that we're not just thinking about ourselves, the rich countries of the region, but we're also thinking about countries that don't have the resources and providing an alternative to the Chinese approach.
Beijing has pledged roughly half a billion doses of its vaccine to more than 45 countries and partnered to produce the vaccines with Southeast Asian countries, including Indonesia. The Quad is often seen as a counterweight to growing Chinese military and economic influence in the region. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said that Beijing should not be concerned about the summit.
This is about an anchor for peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific, and that benefits all nations of the Indo-Pacific. It benefits all the sovereign nations, and particularly our ASEAN partners that we've been a close friend of for so long.
The 90-minute Friday meeting is the leaders' first summit since the Quad's initial meeting in 2004. The U.S. is eager to bolster Indo-Pacific alliances and has chosen Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga to be the first leader to visit the White House for a face-to-face meeting with Biden. Patsy Wirakuswara, VOA News.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told a congressional panel he will be meeting with top Chinese diplomats and will discuss a host of issues that concern the United States. We hear more from VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken outlined the Biden administration's top foreign policy priorities in front of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. His announcement that he will meet for the first time with China's top diplomats in Alaska on the way back from a trip to Japan and South Korea prompted a number of questions from lawmakers. Blinken assured them he would raise a host of U.S. concerns and said for now, this is a one-time meeting.
There's no intent at this point for a series of follow-on engagements. Those engagements, if they are to follow, really have to be based on the proposition that we're seeing tangible progress and tangible outcomes on the issues of concern to us with China.
Blinken agreed with a number of lawmakers from both parties that China's repression of ethnic Muslim Uyghur and other minorities in the Xinjiang region amounts to genocide and called on Beijing to grant access to the international community and the United Nations.
If they have nothing to hide, show it to us. Show the world.
Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Myanmar activists held more rallies against the junta as South Korea said it would suspend defense exchanges and reconsider development aid to the Southeast Asian nation because of the military's harsh crackdown on protests. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The United States and South Korea are conducting annual springtime military exercises. The drills are smaller than usual because of the coronavirus pandemic, but North Korea may still respond angrily, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Scaled back military exercises, yet again for the United States and South Korea. It means they'll look less like these field drills and more like these computer simulations. U.S. officials insist military readiness won't be affected.
Rest assured that we have not become complacent when it comes to North Korea.
Army General Robert Abrams, commander of U.S. Forces Korea, addressed Congress Thursday from a bunker whose location was not released, where the drills are taking place.
Above all, I'm proud to report that our combined joint force here in Korea is credible and ready to execute our assigned deterrence and warfighting missions.
Even before the pandemic, the United States and South Korea were holding smaller drills, an attempt to reduce tensions during high-level talks with North Korea. However, the U.S. may need to soon ramp up the drills, says Korea analyst Do-Yeon Kim.
These defensive drills are designed to defend South Korea and Americans living in South Korea against a potential North Korean attack. And if you're not practicing and if you're not exercising, then it's inevitable that your readiness will erode. And so that's where the concern is.
North Korea walked away from the talks in 2019. There are a few signs they'll return soon. Some fear they'll respond to the military exercises with their own show of force.
Pyongyang has protested these computer simulated drills before. The drills have been scaled down since about 2019 with no field exercises. And yet Pyongyang in 2019, if you remember, they went on a missile testing binge.
For now, North Korea seems more focused on the coronavirus. It's been over a year since the country sealed its border and shut off nearly all trade with the outside world. Meanwhile, in Washington, the Biden administration is focusing on finishing its North Korea policy review, meaning when it comes to U.S.-North Korea relations, it may be a matter of which side moves first. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, Thailand's Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha and members of his cabinet canceled plans to receive AstraZeneca vaccine shots after the country delayed use of the vaccines over reports of blood clots in some European nations, according to a health official. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Afghanistan's stalled peace process was jolted by reports of a U.S.-drafted letter that calls for the creation of a new transitional government. U.S. officials have not confirmed the authenticity of the letter. VOA's Rahim Gulsaran has the story, narrated by Roshan Norzai.
The U.S. letter shown on Afghan television was a letter from U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to Afghan President Ashraf Ghani. The letter calls on Ghani to consider U.S. proposals aimed at speeding up talks on a roadmap to an inclusive government and ceasefire in the country. When asked about it, State Department spokesperson Ned Price declined to comment.
Well, I would say, generally speaking, it is often important for our diplomatic efforts that we're able to conduct them in private.
The Afghan government opposes creating a new transitional administration for the country and instead wants to hold national elections to compete against the Taliban and other political factions in an open contest.
We are ready to discuss a free, transparent, and general election under the management of the international community. We can discuss about the date of the elections and reach an agreement.
Other politicians say after nearly 20 years of war, the country cannot wait for elections to move forward with a peace process.
The letter shows the urgency. It shows that the international community is looking at it as a matter of urgency. I am not defending it. But isn't durable peace a matter of urgency for the people of Afghanistan, for those who make sacrifices every day?
Political analyst Subhan Misbah says that the letter shows that the Biden administration is focused on trying to find concrete progress towards a deal.
It looks like the U.S. Secretary of State is serious and wants to revise and bring some changes in the agreement as soon as possible.
After meeting the Afghan leaders in Kabul and the Taliban in Doha in recent days, the U.S. Special Envoy Zilmay Khalilzad met with Pakistani officials in Islamabad who are believed to have leverage over the Taliban. For Rahim Gulsarwan in Kabul, Afghanistan, Roshan Nurzai, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Olympics Minister Tomio Murakawa said Japanese athletes at the Summer Olympics will not be eligible for coronavirus vaccinations offered by China, since Japan has not approved the vaccines. He also said there was no change in Tokyo organizers' plans for a safe event, regardless of whether participants have been vaccinated. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Australia says losing one shipment of the Oxford University AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine drug because of an export ban in Italy would not badly affect its mass inoculation program. Italy is the first European Union country to use the bloc's new regulations that allow exports to be stopped if a vaccine producer has failed to meet its obligations to the EU. Phil Mercer has more for us from Sydney.
Italy's export ban affects 250,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine that were purchased by Australia. Officials in Canberra say the move won't affect the pace of a nationwide vaccination rollout, but they do want the European Union to review the decision. Australia is caught up in tensions between the drug company and European nations over the supply of COVID-19 treatments. There are fears that Italy's ban could be the start of vaccine hoarding. Jane Halton is the head of the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation.
Vaccine nationalism, in other words, one country making a decision to prioritise its needs over the vulnerable in other countries, is a very real risk. And that's what we're now starting to see play out here. And I certainly hope it doesn't become a global trend.
Italy has justified stopping the shipment by saying Australia, which has recorded a total of 29,000 COVID-19 cases, was considered not vulnerable at this point in the coronavirus pandemic. Australia's Chief Medical Officer Paul Kelly said the country was in an excellent place regarding the virus. Australia has a key weapon against so-called vaccine nationalism. Domestic production of the AstraZeneca vaccine is expected to deliver 1 million doses each week by the end of the month. An earlier shipment of 300,000 imported doses of the AstraZeneca treatment allowed injections to begin in Australia Friday. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
While NASA's Mars rover roams the red planet searching for signs of ancient life, scientists on Earth follow clues in a Turkish lake that may hold some answers. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us the week in space.
Thursday, from a launch pad at Florida's Cape Canaveral, Elon Musk's private spaceflight company did it again. SpaceX says this Falcon 9 rocket successfully deployed a payload of 60 Starlink satellites a little more than an hour after takeoff. The satellites will join others in the company's fledgling Constellation Internet service. SpaceX says it will give online access to people in remote areas of the world. Astronomers say the satellites block their view of space. Listen closely. That clicking sound is the first audio recording of laser impacts on a Martian rock. They come from the SuperCam instrument aboard NASA's Perseverance Mars rover. Scientists say they can study changes in those laser pulses to determine if the laser's target is worth closer analysis. Perseverance is on Mars to look for signs of ancient life near its landing spot, the Jezero crater. U.S. President Joe Biden praised the mission.
It's so much bigger than landing Perseverance on Mars. It's about the American spirit. And you brought it back. You brought it back in a moment we so desperately needed.
Biden also commended the team for their hard work and commitment to science. Meanwhile, back on our home planet, NASA says the mineral and rock deposits at Turkey's Lake Salda are the nearest match on Earth to the makeup of Mars's Jezero crater. Scientists will compare samples taken from Salda to the suspected carbonate materials detected at Jezero. Carbonate minerals come from carbon dioxide and water, a key ingredient of life. NASA's Dr. Thomas Zurbuchen explains the importance of parallel research on the two planets,
in which we can learn and interrogate, kind of come up with ideas that we can go try at Lake Salda before we use it at Perseverance, or when we find something at Perseverance, we can go back to look at Lake Salda to really look at both processes but also similarities.
Finally this week, scientists recently spotted a planet orbiting a star considered relatively close to our own solar system. It's classified as a super-Earth, and scientists call it Gliese 486b. Studying the Earth-like planet could help in the hunt for extraterrestrial life with help from the next generation of ground-based and space-borne telescopes, the first of which launches in October. Scientists have discovered more than 4,300 exoplanets like 486b, but don't pack your bags just yet. Its surface temperature is about 430 degrees Celsius. It could have rivers of lava, and the gravity may be 70% stronger than Earth's. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia, and please come back tomorrow at the same time as we'll be back with another VOA Asia program. We thank those who help bring it to you each and every day. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.